now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults on the cheese in between. The movies are B, but your entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, once again out for a solo outing. And this time I'm talking about 2024's The First Omen. And I'll get to it right after this.
You don't have to be afraid. God has great plans for you. This child is his way.
There's this girl at the orphanage. I think that she really needs someone to look out for her.
Carlita suffers from a touch of madness.
You must be very careful, Margaret. Bad things will start to happen around her. Evil things.
It's all for you. No, don't. What does any of this have to do with Carlita?
This church has maintained power for thousands of years. Lady will stop at nothing to keep it that way. Control people who no longer believe. You create something to fear. I believe the girl is to be the mother.
Mother of what?
It's the mark of the devil.
It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real.
What's not real?
Who said that?
This is very real.
The First Omen was released April 5th, 2024, with a 119-minute running time. Your director is Arkesha Stevenson. Now, this is Miss Stevenson's first movie. She directed episodes of Legion and Briar Patch, and then as well as third season of Channel Zero. So she's not a new director, but new to directing films. So, and then your screenplays are also by Arkesha Stevenson, Tim Smith, and Keith Thomas. With your story by Ben Jacoby, and characters based on David Seltzer, and then obviously your producers here, because this is 20th Century Fox, David S. Goyer and Keith Levine. Like I said, is 20th Century Studios, not 20th Century Fox, that's old. 20th Century did your distribution. Phantom 4 Films is your production company. Your music is Mark Corvan, and your cinematographer is Aaron Morton. Your main stars here are Nell Tiger Free, Tawkri Broham, Sonia Braga, Ralph Ineson and Bill Nighy, who's probably the name you recognize the most. Your budget was $30 million. Your box office, $53.9 million, making it obviously almost doubling its budget there, taking in almost that. This is the prequel to 1976's The Omen, the original, and it's actually the sixth film in the Omen franchise. So here we go. So your story goes a little something like this. Father Brennan passes Father Harris, presses Father Harris about an occult conspiracy. The shaken Harris gives Brennan a photograph of a baby with the name Sakina inscribed. Inscribed. Harris is killed when a falling pipe splits his head open. Okay, so this movie starts off real quick. It's an Omen movie. We are not holding back. We know bad stuff's going to happen. We know people are going to meet the untimely demise, and it starts off quick. In Rome in 1971, amid political protest, American novate Margaret Davino arrives in Verdelli, or the Verdelli orphanage. She meets Cardinal Lawrence, Father Gabriel, Abbess Sister Sylvia, Nun Angelica, and her roommate and fellow noviette, Luz. Luz invites Margaret to a disco where they meet two men. Lou dances with one of the men while Margaret dances with the other, named Paolo, before blacking out. She awakens the next day with no memory of what happened. Now, this is the scene. It's a little, again, they're both becoming nuns. They're trying to become nuns, and they're out for their last night, kind of like blown, like their bachelorette party kind of thing. It's interesting. The movie definitely, it's a period piece. Obviously, it's 71. And you kind of have to remember that, because if you're looking for anything that would kind of tip you off this modern day, you're not going to find it. But yeah, this is cool. She breaks away the next morning. She's blacked out. Margaret now has no memory of what she did or didn't do or whatever. There's only flashes from the night before. Margaret bonds with the mistreated orphan Carlita, who is plagued by bad visions. Father Brennan warns her about Carlita, saying evil things will happen around her. Margaret spots Carlita showing Angelica a drawing of a pregnant woman being restrained. Moments later, Angelica self-immolates and hangs herself. So in an homage to the original Omen, where the nanny hangs herself for Damien, this time Angelica sets herself on fire and then hangs herself, because why not? Brennan explains that radicals within the church, desperate to regain power against the rise of secularism, seek to bring about the Antichrist to create fear and drive people back to the church, with Carlita intended to be its mother. So this is where I think the story takes a big turn. I think some people, if they did not enjoy this film, I think this is where maybe some people got lost. The idea that the Catholic Church is trying to bring about the birth of the Antichrist to bring people back to the church in droves is, I guess, could really be off-putting. But I thought it was really like a great idea. I was like, okay, the church is usually trying to stop the devil from coming back. But this one, they're like, no, let's bring them back and we'll drive people back here. It is funny because when William Blatty wrote The Exorcist, it did exactly the same thing. The Exorcist was so scary, people went back to the church in droves when they read it. The same thing when William Friedkin's The Exorcist came out. People saw it and went back to church. And even though those movies were and books were, the Catholic Church railed against them, just openly railed against these things, it actually served their purpose. It got people to go back to church because, again, whatever you might feel about going to church or whatever, religion you may or may not subscribe to, that's your call. But the one thing the church wants is a lot of people coming there. And my feelings aside about what their underlying or sometimes blatant meaning for certain things, what winds up happening is these movies push people in certain directions, especially if they're really popular. Now, I'm not saying that the first Omen drove people back to the church, but it's kind of funny that they're exploring that idea in the idea of setting up the Omen, because the Omen itself, when it came out, really shook people to their core as well. You got to remember, movies like Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, the original Omen, like those movies shook people hard. And it really changed some people's, you know, kind of changed their outlook and made them go back to things that maybe they had abandoned. All right. So during a field trip, a riot breaks out and Margaret experiences demonic hallucinations. Sister Sylvia postpones Margaret's vows and orders her to distance herself from Carlita. She spots Paolo, horrified, and he tells her to look for the mark before getting cut in half by an oncoming truck. Now, this scene, he gets pinned to the wall, and she goes to help him, and she grabs his top of his body and starts pulling to pull him out. I don't know what she thought she was going to do. He's literally pinned to the wall. But unlike David Warner's head, which rolls and rolls and rolls, he's pinned there. Now, she grabs him, and I'm not sure what she thought she was going to do, but she starts pulling and literally pulls this guy in half. And so the top fist comes off, the bottom goes out, and we got guts all over the street. Margaret sneaks into Sister Sylvia's office. She uncovers a hidden underground chamber and a series of subject files, all labeled Skiena. They contain photos of a dysmorphic babies with birthmarks in the shape of three sixes, with Carlita as seemingly the only survivor. Margaret is intercepted and spots the mark on Carlita's palate before being imprisoned. Father Gabriel frees Margaret. As they examine the files of Brennan, they discover that another baby had survived. Margaret locates the mark on her own scalp and suddenly remembers that she was forcefully impregnated in a satanic ritual the night she blacked out at the disco. Yep, they went there. They went Rosemary's Baby on this one, right? The devil will need to mate with his own spawn in order to conceive the Antichrist, and Margaret has been brought to Rome as her half-sister Carlita was too young. The group drives off to have the pregnancy aborted, but another car crashes into theirs on the way, and Margaret's womb suddenly fills. She awakens strapped to a hospital bed and is greeted by Cardinal Lawrence, and the head of the conspiracy. Now, at this point, I figured, oh, we got to have like 5 minutes left in this movie. Nope, we got like half an hour left in this movie. The Cardinal Lawrence and the other conspirators watch as she gives birth to two children via cesarean, a girl and a boy. The latter is hailed as the Antichrist. Luz and the man who was with Paolo at the disco are revealed to be among the conspirators. So Luz, who set her up at the disco, and we now to believe that she drugged her. Like, I mean, that's what we're really being led to believe here. She set her up to get raped by the devil, right? Which was not Paolo, which just happened to be what happened there. Pretending to be complicit when asked to hold the baby, Margaret stabs Lawrence, but cannot bring herself to kill her son. Luz stabs Margaret as the conspirators flee with the boy and set the chamber ablaze to cover their tracks. Now, Carlita saves Margaret and her daughter. Now, at this point here, I'm thinking like, okay, we're going to have her die. Okay, that could totally work. Carlita bursts in and she saves Margaret and her daughter. Margaret sees a demonic jackal in the flames. The baby boy is given to an American diplomat, Robert Thorne. Okay, right? To secretly place his child's wife, Catherine, who has supposedly miscarried. Now, we know later on we learn that obviously this was, they kill the baby and whatever, kind of, not Damien, and Damien's put in his place. Years later, Margaret lives in secluded in the mountains with Carlita and her daughter, now a happy family. Brennan appears and warns superiors will be hunting for her, and her son's name is Damien, which ties us directly into The Omen, 1976, where we first meet Damien. Now, this movie didn't quite double its budget, but it made profit. So I don't know if they're going to go into another sequel here. Could they? Sure. It would make sense if they did that. This story is the side story about what's going to happen with the family compared to what's going to happen for, you know, anything that like, well, we know what happens with Damien and then we have the Omen 2 and go on. Right. But is this a side story now, where they're trying to track down, you know, Margaret and Carlita and the other daughter? Are they like, is Brennan going to be involved? Could this happen? Sure. I don't know for sure. Obviously, I don't, you know, it's not my movies to make, but 100% that could happen. Now, what you have to make sure is when you're looking at these kind of things is that some people had said that, hey, this movie is a lot like Immaculate. At this recording, I have not watched Immaculate yet. It's on my list of movies to watch, but I haven't seen it yet. So I can't comment on whether this and Immaculate are very similar to each other. My thought is that it both involves nuns. So some people, you know, are so broad in what they, like, these are exactly the same and they're nothing alike. It's much like the way when people said, well, you know, Alien and this other movie are exactly this, like, It's a Terror from Beyond Space. Well, It's a Terror from Beyond Space and Alien do have some similarities, and Ridley Scott has said that he has borrowed from it. But people who say that, oh my God, it's like the exact same movie, clearly have not seen either or both of those movies. It's also the same way people swear that Texas Chainsaw Massacre is filled with blood and gore. And in reality, there's very little blood and gore. That's not actual people skinning their, you know, falling down and cutting themselves or whatever. It's gross. Yeah, there's chicken bones and feathers and stuff everywhere, but there's very little blood and gore in the film, as Dad and I talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So here, could we see another one? Yeah, I guess so. The problem is that the Omen, the first Omen only grossed $20 million in the U.S. and then and Canada, and then grossed almost $34 million in other territories worldwide. It was released at the same time as another movie from 2024 called Monkey Man. And that might have hurt some of it, because Monkey Man opened pretty well. And then, I mean, it took in about, you know, like, you know, 14 to 15 million of its dollars early on, and then it kind of died off, which happens to most movies nowadays. The other issue is, and this has always becomes a problem, post-COVID, we now know movies don't do the same they used to do. It's hard to get a movie that is going to make the kind of money in theaters the way movies used to make money in theaters, especially now that streaming is such an option. Now, I know that if you rented something to watch streaming-wise, it might be $24. But if I can get 6-7 people here to watch a movie, $24 is way cheaper than going to the actual movies. And let's be, you know, you're not driving somewhere, you're not the cost of popcorn, not the cost of soda. All those things are far cheaper than going to the actual theater. Some things need to be seen on the big screen, and I agree. But I'm betting there are some people who did not feel they needed to see the first Omen on the big screen. I did not. I mean, I waited for it to come out. I actually watched it. I want to say it was a Peacock, whatever one had it, or Hulu, whatever one had it streaming, I watched it there before it ever got here on Blu-ray or, you know, to my house. So, you know, overall, some of the reviews on this movie were poor. Some of them understood what they were doing. Some of them actually said that it was a really good predecessor to the original. It's setting up the original story. I think because it didn't insult your intelligence a lot. Like, it didn't ask you to believe in stuff that wouldn't make any sense in 1971, right? There is no cell phones or nothing like that. Nobody knows more than they should. The idea of keeping the conspirators quiet, although I pretty much guess that Luz might be somehow involved, because she kind of is there and then she's kind of in the background, but like, I figured something's got to happen here. But then again, that might be the wrestling fan in me who thinks everything's a work because everything's a work, you know, kind of thing. So that might be that part of me kind of looking for that. I can't guarantee you that your mileage will be the same with this. I happen to like all of the Omen movies. Even the remake, the one with Julia Stiles, it was good. I mean, I don't know necessarily how much it needed to exist, but, you know, the original is still powerful to this day. It still scares people to this day. I talk about this sometimes. You know, the joy of the first time of seeing something really scary, seeing something like really that reaction that I'll never get again, because I had it, you know, when I was younger. Very much like when I talk about when I took my wife to see The Exorcist in the movie theater. I know what's coming. Most of the movie, like at certain parts, I'm kind of like glancing over at her to see, and she was my girlfriend at the time, to see what her reaction is, because I knew she would be terrified. I knew what her reaction was going to be, but I wanted to see that on her. Like, and it sounds weird, but it's just so, it's such a thing that as somebody who's so desensitized to blood and gore and violence and stuff in movies, most things don't shock me. I always try, I'm always guessing the ending. I always kind of know what's going to happen. Perfect example, we watched the family movie If, with Ryan Reynolds and John Krasinski and stuff like that. And I literally like 5 minutes in go, oh, okay, I got it. And I guessed it already. And I didn't say anything to my wife and daughter. I let them go through. And my daughter's starting to get the same way. Haley can start seeing now things. She starts kind of piecing it together. What about 10 to 15 minutes left in the movie? She turns to me. She goes, this is this. And I go, uh-huh. And Kelly goes, how did you know that? And I go, don't worry about it. And we were right. My problem is I figured that out probably, you know, 10 minutes in. You know, and in all fairness, though, my wife, again, she's not as much of a movie buff as I am, which is fine. I mean, again, you're into different things, but she will sometimes say to me when she sees it, oh my God, this hat, like she'll see something and she'll, or she'll call it out. And I'm like, awesome. Like she's starting to pick some of that up. My daughter, on the other hand, having watched so many kind of horror movies and stuff like that with me, she starts figuring things out. I mean, my daughter like literally loves Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. One, because she figured things out quick. She started figuring, like, Happy Death Day, she didn't get as fast. And to be honest, they kind of convoluted that one really well. It took me a little longer to catch on to who the killer, what killer or killers, not to tell you, I don't want to ruin it for you, but who they are. But Happy Death Day 2, my daughter got that in like 15 minutes. She was like, got it exactly. I know what's happening. And I'm like, man, like that's good because she's starting to see that. And I know some of you are thinking like, wow, that's going to ruin things for her. I don't think so. I think that being observant and being able to see those kind of things is important. Whether you know, hone that through always looking for the swerve, always looking for the work, always looking for the whatever. And people might say that's kind of a downer. It's not. It's just a different way of looking at life. And that's one of the things that happened here with the First Omen. I kind of figured that, you know, that I'm like, well, Margaret's got to be the one. She's got to be it. There's no other reason to bring her there. Then they introduce Carlita. And I'm like, okay, but she's kind of young. I'm like, are we going to really have them like say the devil is raping a child and then having a child get pregnant? Like, I'm like, not that they wouldn't go there, but I'm just doubting in 2024 at this point in the game, would we go there? 1970s, 100% could go there. But are we going to have a child? I mean, they don't make a point of her saying that she's 17 or 18, but because she still looks young. They don't ever tell you how exactly old she is, but say, well, she's 18. So then at that point, even though she's still a child, she would not be like, it wouldn't, you know, upset so many people. Although the idea of the devil raping and impregnating anybody can be upsetting. I'm just saying is the idea of being a young child would be really, really upsetting. Especially in today's day and age for the vast audience that they're trying to grab in. Because this is not designed to be just made for horror people. They want to get anybody who's willing to go to the movies to plunk down their, you know, $15, $16, whatever, $17, whatever a ticket costs nowadays, to go see a movie. They're hoping to get your dollar. So they're not going to be able to do that if they're really making you disgusted by what's there through something like that. Did you see this? Did you see Immaculate? Are they similar to each other? I mean, write in, let me know. Hopefully I'll get to see, hopefully I'm going to watch Immaculate soon so I can kind of put it together. Many people have always felt that this is very, things are the same. I heard the same thing about the Russell Crowe movie, The Exorcism, and then his The Pope's Exorcist. I have not seen The Exorcism, but I've seen The Pope's Exorcist, which is very good. People had said, well, they tried to make the same movie, but no budget. The issue becomes, so movies sometimes are made that are similar, at the same time. It happens, especially if something is hot or something, you know, somebody sees something or somebody's shopping an idea or they're shopping a script and then that script is then rejected and then someone shops it somewhere else. It's totally possible things could be there. I'm not saying that, this and Immaculate aren't very similar to each other, or sometimes people refer to them as twin films. But the idea that is there something more that's going to happen, and what caused all this? I know there was some feeling that some of these ideas that having the devil impregnate a woman, which they explored in other other films as well, is this social commentary on abortion? Is this social commentary on the Roe vs. Wade? Is this, whatever. Again, it's outside of my purview to be able to speak to that in depth. What I can tell you is I like the ideas here. I thought this set up well, The Omen from 76. I thought this led really well into it. It didn't insult you. It didn't make you say, wait a minute, why are we doing this? Like, it leads things in. So if you're interested in that, go check it out. Like I said, it's available. I don't remember if it's Hulu or Peacock. It was one of those had it and I watched it there. Or was it, could have been Max? I'm sorry, folks. I'm old and I don't remember things. But I do know it was available. So it's probably out there if you want to check it out. It's on Blu-ray and everything else too. It's streaming everywhere kind of thing. You can check it out and do that. So, all right, folks. Do you have memories of, like, did you see this? Did you see the original Omen? Did you see the original Omen in the theater? My dad always talked about the Omen they saw in the theater as a sneak preview after they saw Mother, Jugs, and Speed, which is a comedy with Bill Cosby. But then it makes you quite question where the real monster is in that setup. But the idea, though, is that they saw it afterwards and the entire theater was dead quiet, not knowing what's happening. It says Gregory Peck and it says, you know, Lee Remick. And like, oh, it's going to be a romantic. What's The Omen? What could it be? But no one knew what The Omen was. Because even though The Omen, you know, like kind of the poster would might tip you off, there might be something going on in the way it looks. The movie that unfolds was so jarring to people, you know, that it wound up scaring a lot of people, like just like The Exorcist did and Rosemary's Baby. Anyway, all right, folks, so that about wraps it up for me here. Thank you all very much for the downloads and listens. Thank you for the support. Obviously, this is a labor of love. You know, myself, my brother, my dad, all the guys on the network and gals on the network. Sorry, I'm not trying to leave anybody out. You know, we do this not because we're making a living at this, but because we enjoy talking about film or comics or whatever we're talking about. We love sharing it with you guys, and your support is greatly appreciated. So I just want to thank you to all those. All right, folks. So like I said, that about does it for me. Like we say here on Bots, Bugs, and Babes, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?